Hello and welcome to The Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis from around the world of football. This week, we're going to look at the top clubs in English football as ever, top clubs in European football. We're going to do it through the prism of, I think it's fair to say, a country that's had perhaps the biggest influence on European football in the last decade or so, which is Portugal. And we have our regular Portuguese guest, Sergio Cricinas, back to join us. Last time we spoke to him, I think he was assistant director of the Portuguese CIA. What's your current title, Sergio? Because I know you get upgrades.
Hello, Duncan. I haven't been sacked, which is the good news. So I'm still the assistant director at Record, which is the biggest and the most successful newspaper, sports newspaper in Portugal. And that's my job right now. And also doing some stuff for the TV. So that's how my life has been going. But on Saturday, I am going on holidays, which is the best news I have for you right now.
Going to the Algarve, I think you told me, for your holiday.
Yeah, I'm spending a week in the Algarve. I think I will spend some days in my hometown, which is Aveiro, up in the north of Portugal. And probably the rest of the time, I'll try to take my daughter to Disney, but I'm not sure if I will be able to do it, although I'm already fully vaccinated, as lots of people in Portugal, the vaccination here is going really, really well.
You're taking your daughter to see Jose Mourinho at AS Roma, who happened to be training in the Algarve at the same time as you go there on holiday.
Maybe I'll do it. I don't know. Maybe I'll have her take a picture with Jose, and then she will keep it as a memory. And when she becomes 30 or 40 and Jose is no longer a coach, I think she will be happy to see herself next to someone who was so marking, so crucial for Portuguese football in the last since the turn of the century.
Let's start with one of Jose Mourinho's many now former clubs, Tottenham Hotspur, who are very active in the current transfer market. New sports director, Fabio Paratici, currently trying to negotiate deals in many positions across the field, and they're working on trying to sign the Argentina international Cristian Romero from Atalanta, as well as Atalanta's backup goalkeeper, Pierluigi Gallini, talking today about how they would have to provide the right cash, and there's lots of competition for Romero, who was voted Serie A Defender of the Year last season. I can tell you that Tottenham are also interested in a player in Portugal, Jesus Corona, right winger at FC Porto, just a year left in his contract, and a position that Tottenham would like to strengthen if they can move out players. They've put Eric Lamela on the market and Lucas Moura on the market, hoping to receive transfer fees and reduce their wage bill. Obviously, Gareth Bale has been sent back to Madrid to play golf for the final season of his very expensive contract there. What do you think about Corona, Sergio? How has he done in Portugal at Porto? And do you think he would be an improvement on what Tottenham already have if they were able to sign him?
I think it's fair to say Jesus Corona is one of the best players in the Portuguese league in the last years. Right now, I look to the current players we have in Portugal, and I would say that, in my opinion, he's the best player in the Portuguese league. A tremendous skillful player. You cannot tell if he's right-footed or left-footed. He's really strong with both feet. Actually, he can play in every position in the attack except striker. Plays more in the wings. At Porto, he plays more in the right wing, but sometimes he plays in the left. Sometimes he plays as right-back, especially in games where the coach is willing to take some risks against smaller teams or Whenever against Chelsea, for instance, in the Champions League last season, he after substitution, Jesus Corona, when they were taking risks to get the goal, Corona was playing right back, and I think he made a mistake actually in Chelsea's second goal in the first leg, the Ben Chilwell's goal. But he's a very, very complete player. He's not very physical. He's a short player, quite short actually, but he's fast with the ball, very skillful, good crossing, can score some goals. I think he could be a good player for a top team in England. If Tottenham gets to sign him, they will be doing a great job. Although Porto is a tough seller, and Jesus Corona, he has 1 year left in his contract, it's true, but his buyout clause has increased automatically from 25 to 40 million euros on July 15th. So Porto will make it tough for anyone who wants to buy him, especially because the coach, Sergio Conceição, is very keen on keeping him. They have lost several players in the last years on a free transfers, like Hector Herrera, he went to Atletico Madrid. Musa Marega now, he signed for Al Hilal. Even Marcano, some players that were the club chose to keep them and keep a strong squad, then making money with them before the contract expired. So let's see what they will do with Jesus Corona. The club needs money, it's true, but the coach is really strong and he has a huge influence in the club. And I think Porto will struggle to find a better player than Corona in the current market. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make an effort to keep him, and even if they lose him in a year on a free transfer.
They have done one of the deals that we've been waiting for Porto to do, which was sign Marco Grujic from Liverpool on a full transfer, although there was a bit of debate about that yesterday, and that the two clubs described the deal in different ways, you were telling me.
Yeah, basically Liverpool assumed it was a full transfer. Porto described it as a loan for now, but they have a mandatory purchase in a year. Total deal will be 10 million euros from what we know. And it shows how Porto, and it's not different from the other top Portuguese clubs, they are postponing their duties, their debts. This case, they couldn't afford to spend 10 million euros right now in Grujic. They have been followed by UEFA for the breaching the financial fair play rules, so they have to be careful with that. And what they're doing is they are hoping to make money enough to have this 10 million euros to pay to Liverpool after July 1st, 2022, which is when the new season and the balance sheet start.
It's an interesting one, because Grujic was told by Liverpool that they wanted 20 million euros for him initially. There were conversations with Sporting, who took the title off off Porto last season. Liverpool briefing that the deal eventually was 12 million euros with a 10% sell on. It's actually has to be quite a low-level deal, because Porto haven't announced it to the Portuguese Stock Exchange, which is standard practice on any significant transfer in Portugal, is it not, Sergio?
Yeah, I think that the rules are not quite clear, but basically the stock market asks the clubs to send them all the relevant information, and what is considered relevant information, like when they sack the coach, that's a relevant information. But when they make a big transfer, in or out, I think the current number is about, if the transfer is about 5% of the total volume of the club, they have to announce. In this case, it was for now it's a loan. I think up to 10 million euros. In the case of Porto, they don't announce. They usually don't announce the transfers of that amount. When it's let's say 15, 20 million euros, they have to announce. Although Porto, in the last years, they haven't been doing so many of those deals. At least signing players.
So Corona, a player they could sell to raise a reasonable amount of cash. Tottenham were also in contact with Damari Gray, who has today signed for Everton, a clever deal that's been organised by Gray's agent, and that he moved to Leverkusen in January, but included a 2 million euro release clause in that deal to go to the Bundesliga, which allowed him to come back to England. Southampton also looking. AS Roma had a look at that price, signed a 3-year contract with an option for another year. You say that Sergio Conceição will be very important in deciding whether Corona is allowed to leave. We entered this summer with a lot of talk about Conceição moving to another European club after 4 seasons at Porto. In the end, he signed a new contract in the Northern Portuguese club. What were you surprised that Conceição elected to stay there?
I was a bit surprised, honestly, because at that point, because the season ended and Conceição hadn't signed the new contract, though Pinto da Costa, Porto's president, had it been have been announcing it or promising it in the last month. And so since everything had been delaying so much, I was suspecting that it wouldn't happen. In the end, there was a lot of talk about some Italian clubs, especially there was some links about Lazio, even Juventus. It was mentioned to Juventus. But in the end, I think he never got the offer he was expecting to have after doing another good Champions League last season. So he signed a 3-year contract with Porto. He has committed to Porto until 2024. And if he fills the contract until the end, if he stays until the end of the contract, he will have 7 seasons at Porto, which is a huge record for a Portuguese coach in a Portuguese club, or a coach in a Portuguese club. Right now, with his 5th season, he's the first coach ever under Pinto da Costa, who has been elected president in 1981. He's been the first the first manager to do 5 consecutive seasons at Porto. I think since the 1930s or 40s, no other manager has been such a long time in Porto.
So was Pinto da Costa elected? I thought he was actually grown in the stadium.
Was born in the stadium, actually. No, like for all my life, he's the only president I remember at Porto, of course. And he's like has won so many trophies over there. He's changed totally the club. People are not aware. People probably see Porto now playing Champions League. They won 2 Champions League under him, twice the Champions League and the European Super Cup, UEFA Cup, Europa League. They won so many international trophies. But Porto, until Pinto da Costa was elected, they had like 7 or 8 Portuguese League titles since the 1930s. They were 19 years from late 50s to late 70s. They were 19 years without winning the Portuguese leagues. They were a small club in Portugal in the sense that they could not fight the Lisbon big clubs. And with Pinto da Costa, everything changed. So he made Porto not only a national big club, also the most successful international club in Portuguese football. So that's why I think he will have probably a statue in Porto, in Porto's ground. And he definitely deserves it. But with, as I was saying about Sergio Conceição, the coach, he has a strong connection with the president as well. He's been a player for the club. He has a strong link, emotional link to the fans, to the to everything in the city as well. But all the squad in the last years, all the players who have been signed and released, has been the coach who has decided everything. He likes the physical players in the sense. He likes some players for his system, for his ideas, working hard, working class players who are ready to fight until the end in his games. And all the profile of the players who have been signed are like that. last season they were a bit desperate in the last day of the transfer window, and they signed some players like Philip Anderson from West Ham on loan, were not Conceição's cup of tea. And from the beginning, actually, when it was Philip Anderson was signed, I could tell from the beginning he will not have an easy life in Porto, and he almost didn't play for Porto. Marco Grujic, actually, it took a while to be playing in Porto, but the second half of the season he made several games. He was playing in a good level. I think that the coach learned, and Grujic probably got used and adapted himself to the way Conceição wanted him to play. So right now, nothing comes in Porto, nothing leaves Porto without Conceição's agreement. So he's the key man. There's no sporting director there. It's him who chooses the players and makes the squad.
Talking to other coaches about Conceição's team, they always remark on how he gets more out of the players than are the sum of the parts. And from a motivational perspective, more than a tactical perspective, it seems like he's a sort of Portuguese Diego Simeone. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a very good image. He keeps saying something like, I can understand if a player misses a pass or makes a mistake, but I cannot understand if a player doesn't run, doesn't try, doesn't work. He's obsessed with work, and even in trainings, he wants his players to be training as they if it was a Champions League final. And whenever he feels a player is not committed or more relaxed, he will go to war with him. That's a very good idea. That he's probably the kind of Diego Simeone over here.
So we talked about the eternal force of Pinto da Costa, an amazing story, I think, at the other end of Portuguese football in the last week or so, that the eternal force at Benfica, their president has been forced to resign and leave the club, Luis Felipe Vieira. Tell us about that. Tell us the detail of what has happened there and the implications it has for Benfica as a football club.
What happened to Luis Felipe Vieira was like history in front of our eyes. It was the first time that a Portuguese, the president of a Portuguese top club was arrested and went in charge. About 25 years ago, Benfica had a president was also actually convicted for fraud, but he was only arrested after leaving the club. And Vieira was arrested while in the club. He's been the president of the club for the last 17 years. So he's like not Pinto da Costa, but kind of Pinto da Costa's past. He's been really strong and powerful in Portugal, not only in football, but also in politics, in economics and everything. And he was arrested for two things. First, he was accused of, with a friend with the help of an agent, was also arrested and released on bail. He was accused of taking money from the club on commissions. And the second thing was he was also accused of using the club and to launch an operation to buy the club's shares were split in the market to help a friend of his to make a lot of money while he was also making money from with the help of his friend. He spent three nights in jail.
This friend was José dos Santos.
That's him, José Antonio dos Santos, an 80-year-old man who is a close friend of him, also business partner in several companies. And now we know that they share companies like through relatives, like José Antonio dos Santos' wife has a company together with Luis Felipe Vieira. Luis Felipe Vieira's daughter has a company together with José Antonio dos Santos. Of course, it doesn't look good. And the investigations believe that it was also all part of a scheme to take money out of Benfica and especially to avoid paying the huge debt Vieira had to the biggest private bank we had in Portugal that collapsed about 10 years ago, Banco Espírito Santo. One of the cases of a bank that went to bankruptcy, and now the government had to pay all the debts, and Vieira was the second biggest debtor to the bank.
And the agent involved was Bruno Macedo.
Bruno Macedo, a guy that has lots of deals in Brazil, lots of connections in Portugal, also. And also Vieira's son was also arrested because he's a chairman in several of Vieira's companies, basically construction companies. So four people were arrested in that. And there's a lot of stories in Portugal claiming that this is only the tip of the iceberg. This is only the start, because other clubs, other agents in football, other people in football will be also arrested soon. And there's a huge belief that there's football, not only in Portugal, but also in Portugal, is an environment which is really good to laundry money and to tax evasion and also to fraud.
And this operation is called Cartão Vermelho, red card.
Red card, yeah, that's it.
It's effectively given the biggest figure in Portuguese football in terms of running a club a red card, because he stepped away from his position as president and then voluntarily resigned his position as president.
Yeah, the decision from the judge was to forbid him to contact the other members of the board of the company who runs the club, which are for other people. Two of them are also club's vice president, Rui Costa and José Eduardo Muniz, so he could not be in touch with them at all. Of course, without being able to be in touch with the other members of the board, he could not be the football company, the SAD president. After that, they decided that he had to resign, and so he did. He could keep the role as club's president. There was nothing, no decision against it. But of course, there was no conditions for him to stay, and he also resigned from the club last week. And Rui Costa was appointed as second vice president, or first vice president, second in the list in the last elections, who were held in October. Rui Costa took charge of both club and the football company.
Now, what's the impact for Benfica as a football club, as a trader in the transfer market, of not having Vieira in play anymore? Because he wasn't a standoff president. He was the guy who was actively doing deals, basically a chief executive, almost a sports director, would it be fair to say, in some ways?
Yeah, it's true. Vieira was involved in every transfer. I think, honestly, this is my personal view. Things will change a lot in Benfica. Vieira was like a tree that was drowning everything around him, you know, in the sense that things were doing, nothing was done in Benfica without Vieira knowing, and he was controlling everything, even the way he was acting in the stock exchange, and there's a lot of things that I think we still don't know for sure what happened, but for sure it will be a different club right now. Lots of agents were relying on their relation with Vieira to make deals, and Benfica in the last years, they were signing and selling a lot of players, not only first team players, not only players that they wanted to for the team, but they were also trying to be a trading point and making profit on players, like free transfer. They sign free agents and then they would include them in other deals and try to make profit on that. I think without Vieira on the board, things will be different. And right now you see Benfica has signed only three players for this summer. They are, I think, more quiet in the transfer window, but probably they will miss some connections that Vieira has. But in the end, it's such a big club. They have so a few good players, and they will be living. I think life goes on for Benfica.
How do they resolve their problems in terms of finances, having lost someone like Vieira, with the squad they've got? Because a couple of years ago, Benfica were a team which was focusing on young talent and developing young talent to sell on, and João Félix being the cardinal example of that. But if you look at Benfica's current squad, where they're trying to raise cash, there doesn't seem to be a lot of that type of talent left in it.
It's true. Last season, they totally changed their policies and they signed Jorge Jesus back, the coach who had been in the club for 6 years, since 2009 to 2015. He won the Copa Libertadores with Flamengo, and Vieira decided to bring him back after losing the league to Porto. Jorge Jesus is not famous, he's not known for giving young players a chance to play. Actually, he's been quite accused of doing the opposite. And last season, Benfica spent 100 million euros in transfers, which was crazy in a pandemic year. They signed Everton from the Brazilian national team. They signed Young Vertonghen on a free transfer, but with a high salary. They signed Darwin Nunes for 24 million euros. Otamendi with a huge salary from Man City. They signed a lot of players who were established, not young kids, not young prospects. They signed players who they felt they could be and give an immediate impact to the team.
So basically you're saying that Jorge Jesus is the Harry Redknapp of Portuguese football.
I don't know what you mean with that, but he's, Jorge Jesus has won some trophies in Portugal, actually. he has won the league three times for Benfica, so he has some trophies, and he has reached twice the Europa League final, so I think Redknapp doesn't have that CV, but Jorge Jesus is a coach that wants to win at every cost, so he's not ready to have patience with a kid and making mistakes on the pitch, you know. So that was a policy last year, and it was a total disaster for the club. They finished the season third without the Champions League spot guaranteed. So now they are struggling a bit also in finances. They have released bond issues to raise at least 50 million euros. It happened while the president was being arrested, so they are a bit scared with that as well, because they don't know for sure if they will raise all the money they have released in bonds, which finished on Friday, actually, the deadline. And they are fighting for their lives in the Champions League. They have to play Spartak Moscow, which is, by irony, managed by Rui Vitória, the coach who replaced Jorge Jesus at Benfica in 2015, and the coach who won two leagues against Jorge Jesus because he was in Sporting. So there's also this irony. And last season, Benfica was knocked out in the Champions League. They were in the third qualifying round against PAOK with a goal from Zivkovic, a player who had been released from Benfica a month earlier. So, there's a lot of coincidence, and I think the fans are a bit scared about what Rui Vitória may do to the club right now, to Benfica right now.
And with that huge spend on Jorge Jesus, both in salary and terms of players, they finished third, which is why they have these problems with the Champions League. Who do they sell? Because we see the names Julian Weigl being linked, Haris Seferovic, Darwin Nunez, who interestingly has been on Manchester City's list as an alternative option.
But he's injured now, and he won't be ready until late September, October. He had a knee injury, so he's out of the market for sure.
So who do they sell to raise the cash? Apart from Nuno Tavares to Arsenal.
I think they are hoping on making money on Seferovic after the Euros. He was good in Euros for Switzerland. And maybe with Carlos Vinicius. He was not brilliant at Tottenham, but I think he did enough to have some credit. He didn't play much, but he scored some goals for the time he had played. So they think they can do some money with Carlos Vinicius, the striker, as well. They have already sold Pedrinho, a Brazilian guy, to Shakhtar Donetsk for 18 million euros, which was the money they spent on him last season. They were lucky to get almost the same money they spent on him. Julian Weigl, I think they will try to get something for him, but the problem is that they paid 20 million euros for Julian Weigl, and he has a huge salary. He's probably the biggest salary in the squad. I think it's nearly 2.5 million euros net per season. And right now they are hoping to get a club for Julian Weigl, but they are aware it will be difficult to do it.
Okay, that's Benfica. Across Lisbon, let's look at Sporting, who remarkably sell Bruno Fernandes, the best player in Portugal, as you told us, long before he left for Manchester United, and then go and win their first title in, I think, 19 years in the season after, which I don't think I heard anyone in Portugal predict as something that was going to happen last season.
No. It was even they were top of the table. If you ask people in January when they were top of the table, they would say no, they will go down for sure. They cannot stand this until the end of the season, but they did, and they lost one game in the league. In 34 games, they lost the last game at Benfica, actually, 4-3, if I remember. The first in 42 games in the whole season, they lost three. They lost the second game in Europa League against LASK Linz. They were beaten 4-1 at home. It was a bad result for them, a really bad result. And it was early in the season. Everybody was like, okay, this is going to be another bad season for Sporting. But actually, it was a bliss in disguise for them, because they, without the European football, they could focus in the Portuguese league. Benfica, Porto and Braga, until December, January, they were playing twice a week, and Sporting was playing once a week. And so they could manage to build a team and to grow as a team. So in the end, they totally got deserved the league. And they were also knocked out in the cup in January. So they lost three games the whole season. It was against LASK Linz in the cup, against Marítimo away, and at Benfica in the last week in the last game of the league, when they had already won the league. So it was a massive season for them. And you have to give a lot of credit to their manager, Ruben Amorim, who is now everybody sees him as the next big thing in Portuguese football. He's probably has been having an impact similar to what José Mourinho did in his first season at Porto.
So what did he do to change the team after losing Bruno Fernandes? Because he's just 36 years of age. Very interesting story about how Sporting recruited him from Braga the season before.
He's like, he doesn't have the qualifications to be a top coach, a coach in the first division in Portugal. Actually, he was being fined every game for being, actually, during the first part of the season, he was not officially the coach of Sporting, because he didn't have the license degree, the UEFA Pro degree. So he was assistant coach at Sporting, and there was a lot of complaints about his qualifications, lack of qualifications. He was fined, Braga were punished, Sporting were punished. Before he was at Casa Pia in the third tier in Portugal, and they were also punished. They were deducted points because they had him as a coach without the qualifications. So there's a bit of controversial about his about this lack of qualifications. The fact he went to Braga for the B team, Braga sacked their manager 2 years ago, and they brought him to the first team. He did 13 games for Braga in the first team. 13 games. He won 10 of them, including Benfica, Porto and Sporting. He won a League Cup in these games. And after 13 games, Sporting, they were totally desperate back then. Sporting, Frederico Varandas, he was struggling, the president, Frederico Varandas, he was struggling to keep his position, because there was a lot of people wanted him out of the club. And Frederico Varandas made an all-in move, and without money, and they went to Braga. They paid the release clause of Amorim, which was 10 million euros, but then they had to pay more in the end, because they got delayed on the payments. But he paid 10 million euros for the coach, basically to save his position as a president. And they felt he was the right man, and he was. He grabbed the club in March 2020. I think he made one game before the pandemic came and stopped everything. And the last months of the season, the last games of that season were not brilliant. They had 11 games and they won 6. Okay, it's not brilliant. And this following season, he made some tough decisions, like sending out some players like Marcos Acuña, Argentinian international. He was put apart from the squad before he was sold to Sevilla. One of the best players the Sporting had. He made a lot of brave decisions, bringing kids to the first team, like Nuno Mendes, Gonçalo Inácio, playing centre-back, Thiago Tomás up front, Daniel Bragança, midfielder. Lots of young players who never had a chance at Sporting. Some of them, they were 18 when they started to play for Sporting, and they were starting playing as a starters for Sporting. They started with a 3-4-3 system, signed some key players, and they were not expensive, like Pedro Porro, who came on loan from Manchester City, 2-year loan. Signed Fedal, a Moroccan center back, was not playing at Betis. Signed Adan, the goalkeeper, was bench and Atletico Madrid. Signed some key players, and they were brilliant last season, and they totally deserve it. He has signed, meanwhile, a new contract with a release clause of 20 million euros. And I think we'll have a huge test this season. They will play Champions League, of course, and they will play twice a week, at least until December. I think if he does well in the Champions League, and of course, doing well for Sporting is not winning the Champions League. It's if he goes through the knockout stage, the group stage, and he reaches the knockout stage, it will be massive for Sporting. They just did it once, I think, in the last 20 years. If he does that, I believe that lots of European clubs will be looking to him. I think they already are, but they will be totally convinced he is a guy that is worth to look at, and probably to spend a lot of money on him. He's a brilliant guy. He's very funny, with a great sense of humor, always ready to tell a joke, but very competitive. When you see him on the bench during the games, he's arguing with the referees. He's been sent off during the season, I think, 4 times. He's like, the referees say he's really, really, he's a pain for the referees, like, you know, really competitive, always pushing, making decisions. But if you listen to him outside of the game, he's a polite, intelligent, bright, funny guy. So I see him being the next big thing in Portuguese football in the next years.
Well, he was being offered around some of the top clubs in Europe this summer, I think with the idea of securing money for him because of that 20 million euro release clause in his contract. My understanding is he was offered to Celtic and also to a couple of Premier League clubs who were looking for managers. I think there's also something interesting going on with Nuno Mendes, you mentioned there. Same agent as Bruno Fernandes. A very similar story to the one we saw with Bruno Fernandes when we were told that he had agreed to sign and that Manchester City had a deal in place with Sporting quite early on in the process, which was something that was being fabricated in order to extract interest from other English clubs. Tottenham obviously had a go at Bruno Fernandes, eventually went to Manchester United. Nuno Mendes, in this case, has been offered to Manchester United. Manchester City do like the player, is my information, that Cheeky Bergiristan thinks he is the best player in Sporting squad at present, but not interested at the price that Sporting have been trying to get for him, which has been mentioned at 60 million euros. Do you think Mendes is ready to go to a Premier League club and a top Premier League club, that kind of fee is realistic for a player of his level at present?
It's hard to tell. The pandemic has totally disrupted the transfer window market. Before the pandemic, I would tell you that I think Nuno Mendes could be player to be worth 40, 50 million euros. I think he's a very good player. His cheek is not, he's right. I think he's the best player in the Sporting squad, at least the one that you could see playing in at a top level. He's strong, very fast, skillful. He's a good kid in the sense that's humble, learns. And if you see the way he started to play, he started to play for Sporting as a starter, and he was 18, just after he turned 18, and he was like playing in the kindergarten with his friends, you know, very comfortable. He was didn't feel the pressure. But if you think, and there was a guy from the Portuguese national team who told me that. Nuno Mendes, he never played a professional game in front of a crowd. He never had people watching him live on a stadium because he started to play after the pandemic hit us. So we don't know how will the pressure will affect him, the pressure from the fans. In England, you would have that. I think from what I know from him, he has his mind in the right place, a good mentality, strong mentality. So maybe that wouldn't be an issue. But right now, the clubs are more careful and cautious with on how they spend money. But it's definitely a player that if nothing strange happens, I think he will be playing in a top team in a couple of years. Again, probably lots of teams are waiting to see him play in the Champions League, to see him develop, to see how he behaves against top sides, against at a higher level. He needs that. But in Portugal, he has played big games against Benfica, Porto, so Braga. So he has done really well. So I think I can imagine him playing easily in a top team in a couple of years or 3 or 4 years time.
Another player that Sporting would like to sell if they can get the right money for is their central midfielder, Jean Palhinha. I take it he's one of the players that Amorim brought with him from Braga since he'd had him on loan there and, yeah, and promoted him into the Sporting first team. The asking price, I understand, is 30 million euros, and he's been offered around Premier League clubs at present.
Yeah, he's one of the players that has been linked with more clubs. The information I have is that Sporting president Varandas told Amorim he's not selling Palhinha. He's going to keep him. He played in the Euros, so his price, I believe, at least went a bit up. I have some doubts about him in the sense that I honestly don't see him ready for a top level team. Nuno Mendes, I believe he can do it. Palhinha, I think, well, he's a very good player, of course. He can play in the Premier League, can play Serie A, can play in many teams. But I think he would not make such a big difference as Nuno Mendes would do in a team.
So, Sergio, we've talked about the three biggest Portuguese clubs in Portugal. Let's talk about the biggest Portuguese club in the Premier League. Wolverhampton Wanderers. Bruno Lage, good appointment or not after their great successes under Nuno Espirito Santo?
Honestly, it's hard to predict, Duncan. Bruno Lage, we just know him for his time at Benfica over here in Portugal, especially in the first team. And he became the best player, the best manager in Benfica history, and also the worst manager in Benfica history. it was like really bipolar his spell at Benfica. He grabbed the team in January 2019, and the second half of the season, Benfica was perfect. I think in 19 games, they won 18 and drew one. And so they recovered from a seven point difference to Porto and won the title, which was an amazing performance, one of the best ever in Portuguese football. And he did that actually with lots of young kids. Ruben Dias was already starting, but also other kids like Florentino, Ferro, João Félix as well. So he brought a lot of young players, and he made the perfect second half of the season. The following season, he was quite good in the first half of the season, one defeat only against Porto. And then after January, February, Benfica went down dramatically. And they had a 7-point lead, and they finished the league like 5 points behind Porto after lots of games without wins. So it's hard to tell which one is the real Bruno Lage. I think he struggled a bit in Benfica to cope with the pressure of being in a top team. Lots of people arguing and questioning him and questioning his choices every day. I believe that he got to influence on his mind, also on his choices, though the way sometimes he chose thinking too much about what people would think. I think I value him. I think he's a intelligent guy, has good knowledge of football. Probably England will be easier for him, and in a club which doesn't have the same media request and the media interest like Benfica does in Portugal, could be easier for him. So I'm quite curious to see which one will be the real Bruno Lage over there at Wolves, if it's the first Bruno Lage or the second Bruno Lage in Benfica.
So they've refreshed the team to a certain extent. They've allowed Rui Patricio to move to Roma eventually, and brought in José Sá for a lower fee from Olympiacos, a player who has been part of the Portugal national team squad, but not yet started for the national team. They've also taken Trincão from Barcelona with an option to buy, which seems to me quite an intelligent move and typical of the type of things that Wolves have done under the Chinese ownership.
Very good player, Trincão, yeah, it's true.
What do you see happening with Ruben Neves? Because they want to raise cash in the transfer market. Pedro Neto had been identified as someone they could sell, and then he got himself injured, so difficult to do that with the injury he has in the current market. Adama Traore, also in a similar situation, not injured, but available for sale. Ruben Neves seems to be the one that they have the highest chance of shifting in this window. Interesting in that Manchester City wanted to sign him 2 years ago and offered £60 million. At the time, the Chinese owners said, no, we need £80 million, and City stepped away from it. My guidance is that they're asking £50 million at the moment, with Arsenal already having made quite strong contact with Wolves and with Neves about the deal. You have Manchester United also in the market for a defensive midfielder. And there's a feeling that the price might go as low as 40 million. Do you think that's good money for someone like Ruben Neves? You'll have watched his career and how he's developed into a Portugal international. You understand why they would sell him now, and that he's ready to take that next step to a Champions League club.
It could be good money. I mean, if you asked me that question 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I would say no. I think he was worth more than that. But it's quite hard for me to see how this transfer window will develop in terms of big deals. We haven't had so many until now. You don't see money floating around Europe as you used to see before. Lots of clubs don't have the money. You have the problem with the French clubs who are bankrupt. The Spanish clubs are bankrupt. The Italian clubs are bankrupt. So I think right now, if you get 40 million euros, I think that was the figure you said, right?
40 million pounds is the number.
Okay. Pounds for a defensive midfielder, it's quite good money. Even if it's a player in the Premier League on a Premier League transfer, I think it will be hard for them to say no to Wolves, to say no to that offer. And especially because they have the connections and they have done in the past, the recent years, they have done really well their homework with scouting young and good players like Ruben Neves, for instance. Everybody thought he was too expensive when they signed him because he was a young prospect. And now everybody sees he was a good signing. The same as Pedro Neto, for instance. Pedro Neto was a player that... Benfica also tried to sign them, and everybody thought it was crazy to pay more than 15 million euros for a player like him. And you see, he has developed into a really good player. So, I think in this current market, it could be a good deal for them. And I think with half of that money, even less, they will find a good replacement for him.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do they replace him with? You know the Portuguese market. You know the type of players they look for. If they do sell Neves, who do you think they would bring in as a replacement?
Let me take a wild guess. Why not Florentino from Benfica? On loan or something? He was Monaco last season and loan didn't play that much.
Yeah.
But he was very good with Lage. The good Lage, the first half, the first months of Lage at Benfica, Florentino started, was one of the kids that he brought to the first team, and he was became a really good player, interesting player. He's not Neves, he's totally different from Neves. He's a more positional midfielder, not very strong, not as strong as Neves in long passing, on shooting. He's not that kind of defensive midfielder. But he's has a very good positioning, very good, lots of interceptions in the game. I think probably is a bit better defensively than Ruben Neves. And he's starting for Portugal under 21. Well, starting, he's in the Portuguese under 21 national team. So I think he still has a potential. I mean, although he hasn't played that much in Monaco, well, almost didn't play in Monaco last season, I think he's a very interesting player. And I would not be surprised if Wolves and Bruno Lage take some risk on signing him, because maybe they could get a cheap deal or a loan or something. And it could be interesting to test him at that level.
Let's talk about another midfielder from Benfica's academy, Renato Sanches. Quite a story that he moved to Bayern in 2016 in a deal that could have been worth up to 80 million euros. In the end, I think Benfica only got 35 million plus a couple of the 5 million bonuses for games played. Then loaned to Swansea City, eventually transferred to Lille for 20 million euros in 2019, and Lille only paying half his salary. The rest being paid by Bayern. Now, after winning the championship at Lille and some good performances in the European Championship, he is on people's attention again. Lille, obviously one of those clubs in France affected financially and looking to sell at profit. My information is that Barcelona are trying to structure a deal that would allow them to sign Renato Sanches. It's obviously going to be difficult. They've got a huge number of problems in terms of getting players off their books at present, but they want someone of his type, having lost out on Gini Wijnaldum, who Koeman had made very important to his summer transfers. Probably they're going to try and structure this as a loan with an obligatory option to buy. I think you know quite a lot about how things went wrong for Renato when he went to Bayern. Can you tell us about the development of his career, player you flagged up as being a major talent?
It is, yeah, totally. But he left Benfica when he was 18. And honestly, I think all the hype around him, he had won the Euros with Portugal before he turned 19. Bayern had already signed him back then.
Yeah.
And of course, when you move to a club like Bayern, which is... I would say quite difficult for a club, for a Portuguese kid, moving. I think he moved on his own to Munich, and he had. I was told he was living there with some cousin, young kid as well. Doesn't speak German, don't think he spoke very well English. So he struggled a lot, and the expectations were huge because he was presented, I think, the same day as Mats Hummels. And he was one of the most expensive Bayern Munich signings ever. So the expectations were huge. I think his own expectations were huge. And since after things didn't start really well for him, I think he just went down the drain and could never regain his confidence there. Then later, his move to Swansea was a disaster. And when he went to Lille, he found a club with a Portuguese sporting director, Luís Campos, a club where they were they had other Portuguese players. José Fonte, I think, was already there. So he found like comfort, like being at home somehow. And that's, I think, how he developed like that and regained the balance on his career. If you compare the way, they are totally different players, okay? But if you compare the way Ronaldo moved to Man United in 2003 and the way Renato Sanches moved to Bayern Munich in 2016, they were totally different. And you're talking about players at the same age. They were both 18 when they moved. When they had the transfers, the expectations were really high for both of them. But you see Ronaldo in the first season and under Alex Ferguson, he was not a starter for Man United. I mean, they had a plan for him, let him grow slowly. And he only became the key player for United, I think it was 2005, 6, around that. So they had the patience, they knew how to develop him, to get him ready to be playing at the top level. And fulfill his potential. With Renato Sanches, I think the main fault was from Bayern Munich with all the expectations they created, and they thought they were signing an adult and they were signing a teenager.
He has something very special about him that you can see the ability to run with the ball and to hold, kind of bounce opponents off him.
Yeah.
Seems to disturb a lot of opponents at the top level. You can understand where that attraction came from. But do you think if he was to move to Barcelona, do you think he's at a stage of maturity where he could handle that now?
I think what he has been through in Bayern and then later at Swansea have been really great lessons for him. So probably he became better person, better, more adult with what happened to him. So could be better for him. And I think probably the people around him, agents and people take care of his career, will not let him be alone as he was in Munich most of the time. Could be interesting. On football terms, Barcelona Koeman wants a player like that. He failed Wijnaldum, it's true. Honestly, it was not the kind of player I would have been imagining playing for Barcelona, a team that they have Frenkie de Jong. It's a totally different midfielder. I don't see it really well how will they connect the way de Jong plays and Renato Sanches plays. I don't know what's in Koeman's mind, but he is a player that... I remember him in Benfica when he started to play. He was early 18. Shortly after he turned 18, he started to play for the Benfica first team, and he has changed Benfica's season. And he was just a kid who just turned 18 and started to play for the first team in around November. Until November, Benfica was totally a depressive team, losing games. Losing 3-0 at home against Sporting Lisbon in the Lisbon Derby. They were totally, I think, 7 points behind the leader Sporting. Renato Sanches came in and totally changed the team by himself. I mean, the kind of player, you give him the ball and he will push the team to the front. He will drag the team by himself. You know, the way you say, he grabs the ball, he bounces the opponents, he... Can move, gain meters with the ball, very aggressive, chasing the ball. He's a special player, really special player, and a guy that can change a team by himself. alone. But I think he needs to be handled carefully. You know, he needs a death sign. You see on the boxes, the paper boxes, handled careful.
He was obviously one of the players that Mourinho wanted to bring into Manchester United when he arrived there, but Bayern Munich were too quick for them. We started the podcast talking about how Mourinho's headed for the Algarve with AS Roma. Let's finish this part of the podcast by asking you, what do you think it's going to be like for him at Roma? I think you have some good information on how his time at Roma has started.
I think it will be tough. The Mourinho and Roma and the new people at Roma, the owners, Friedkin, also the Portuguese sporting director, general director, Tiago Pinto, they have a big challenge, which is convince the fans that Roma is not as big as they think. I think that's the key for them. Now they signed Mourinho. Of course, Mourinho is has a huge respect in Italy. Most of the press, the fans believe Roma will be fighting with Juventus and AC Milan and Inter Milan and Napoli for the Scudetto next season. But in the club, they are aware it won't happen. I mean, it's not the plan. They want to make a three-year plan. They want to get to that point in 3 years, not now, because they feel they have a lot of things to change in the team, the mentality of the team, improve the squad, getting different kind of players. The biggest challenge they are facing now, right now, is, in my opinion, is to convince the fans they are not as good as they think they are.
Do you think that's a challenge for Mourinho, in that he's not used to having to build things? He puts an internal pressure on himself on top of the external pressure to win immediately, and this is kind of a different task for him.
It's true, but Mourinho, I think, is how do you say it in English? Is being a victim of himself, in the sense that since the start of his career, he has been winning trophies. Since he moved to Porto, he was winning big trophies and important trophies. It's not just winning the Portuguese League; it's winning Portuguese League plus UEFA Cup plus Champions League, then winning the Premier League twice with Chelsea, winning everywhere he went. And being really successful. And that's what people expect from him. And that's why you look to Mourinho's career in the last years. His spell at Man United would be considered good for most of the managers in the world. And most people look at Mourinho's job at Man United as a poor job, because it's Mourinho. Because it's Mourinho. Mourinho wins. Mourinho always wins. And that's what people think. And it's not true. Nobody wins every time. I think he has this karma with him, this problem with him, with Mourinho. He has a ghost of winning all the time, and people expect him to do it. And when he moves to Roma, probably the message the fans will get is that we're having the manager that wins every time, so we're going to win. And from what I know, the plan is not to win, and the fans have to be... keep that in mind. The plan is not to win immediately. It's not... if Roma finishes fourth this season in Serie A, I think it will be a successful season for them. And I think that's how it will be seen inside the club.
So we always do a podcast segment called Hero and Villain, and going from Jose Mourinho is probably a good way as any to get into hero and villain, because he quite often is hero and villain simultaneously for countries and groups of supporters and media. I'll start with a villain this week, and I'm going to go for the Confederation of African Football, who have recently announced that they're in favour of the World Cup moving to a two-year cycle, something which Gianni Infantino, of course, is in favour of. And I think the fact that Gianni Infantino is in favour of it is not entirely disconnected with the vote from the African Federation.
Let's see what UEFA are going to say about that. Well, they've said already. forget that. They will not do it.
Not a great idea.
No.
But we know why Infantino wants to do it. And if you want to read a bit more about it, I suggest you go to Philippe Auclair and look at some of his reporting. We've had him on the podcast before. Some of his reporting on why the African Federation is in step with Gianni Infantino's wishes for the World Cup and more football in the summer. Sergio, your job is to pick a hero.
I will pick a hero who is also a villain and a zero.
Florentino Perez has been in the news last week for some old audios, yeah, I think from 2006-2007, private conversations where he blasts lots of people, especially Portuguese people. Actually, he's been quite... it's not been nice to Portuguese people, to Figo, Ronaldo, Mourinho, Jorge Mendes, Pinto da Costa, all Portuguese. Of course, he has meanwhile been apologizing to everyone. He has written Porto's president Pinto da Costa apologizing and saying that the words were taken out of context. But I don't know how can you take out of context when someone says clearly, even if it's in a private conversation, if he says Pinto da Costa and Jorge Mendes, they were stealing money from the transfer of Pepe and putting the money in a bank account in Switzerland. It's a private conversation, it's true, but unless your mind have changed about that, it's not serious to say it. It's serious to think about it and think that it's true. And apparently Florentino Perez, at least he thought it was true. And probably with the Super League, he will not have to worry about Porto, and because he will not have to play Portuguese teams anymore.
And how was this attack from Spain taken in Portugal?
Well, the Porto situation was serious, of course, because he was accusing Porto's president and Jorge Mendes of illegal things. Porto made a statement saying we have nothing to hide. The deal with Pep was 30 million euros. They explained how the money was split. But that's serious about Mourinho and especially Figo and Ronaldo. It's all basic insults, which I can understand in a private conversation and saying, especially if you're not happy with someone, you at least in a Latin culture, those kind of words can easily come out of your mouth, even if you don't mean it really, but if you are not happy with someone. So I don't take that so seriously, but accusing someone of stealing money, even if it's in a private conversation, it's a very serious allegation. So that's not pretty to see.
Thanks, Sergio, for joining the transfer window.
My pleasure, Duncan. So let me know when you want me in again, because I'll be happy. Not in the upcoming 3 weeks, hopefully.
We'll let you have your holiday.
Thank you.
You're not on social media, are you, Sergio?
I'm on some social media, but not on Twitter. Yeah, Twitter is get tired of the abuse, so I'm not on Twitter anymore.
So give us one of your social media addresses.
I'm on Facebook. It's the one that I use more.
Okay. This has been the news before it became news. If you enjoyed what you heard from our special Portuguese edition, please subscribe on one or more of our platforms, rate the podcast, review it, and share it with your friends. We will be back for another Transfer Window podcast very soon. Please, while you're waiting for it, keep well, be safe, and thank you for listening.